Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Okay. We've got to work that way. We've got to work in little simple, tiny little snippets, not because people can't comprehend anything else, but because people don't have time to comprehend anything else. But there I go again. Hey, guys, we've done it to another hour.
Uh-oh.
Yep, it's gone again. But yeah, what a fun hour it was. Great idea, John. Great idea. I can't wait to watch this thing take shape.
I agree. Way to go, John.
Yeah, thank Gail for that one. It was definitely spurned from her brain.
Good job, Gail. And in the meantime, we'll see you around the corner there, John, and off to bed with you, Peter Godbold.
Oh, snore.
Night, Peter.
Hello, John boy.
John.
Yeah. And so, in the interim, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
Hey, folks. Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Just like the other one. You've been holding on to it. And I sure would like it. Don't over that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
This is a top to a... You know, we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. Foxed up here for Wednesday night or Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble such that it is. And we're going to get back to some green stuff again today after kind of dissecting the language of Barack Obama yesterday. And, yeah, I got some good stuff. Gene sent me a couple of things. I got a great little Haagen-Dazs story. I know, I'm going to talk about ice cream. But that'll come a little later. And if you hadn't been listening to the Horn section, we're going to run a little bit of a special poll next week, looking for recommendations. See, John McCain's been having a lot of problems with being able to, you know, settle on a campaign theme song because most of the artists don't support him and tell him to stop. So we thought we might recommend a few songs, and we went through in the Horn section a few different options. There's been talk of, Johnny Come Lately from the Eagles. Bob had a great drive-by truckers tune. There's just all kinds of suggestions. And so if you have any suggestions, please email me, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. And make your suggestions, and Monday we will audition and play all of the finalists on Foxed Up here Monday night and open the poll, and we'll leave it open for a week, and we'll see what result we get, and we'll send it off to the McCain campaign and say, hey, we've come up with your theme song. I am personally voting for Hooker with a Penis from Tool, but that's just my evil brain. Before we go to the track of the day, our good friend Susan is on the line. Welcome to the program, Susan. Haven't talked to you in a little while.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm just fine. I just wanted to let you know that those songs I sent you, they're not as dark as they seem. The guy that wrote them, Tom Lehrer, was in his time the primo satirist of his age.
Right.
I can guarantee you. John McCain knows who Tom Lehrer is.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the one about World War III is done to a ragtime piano solo. You can hear a sample of it up on Amazon.
I'll have to have a look.
He used
I'll
to work
to
with Dr. Demento, just to show you what kind of a person he is.
Oh, okay. Parameters have been set. I know where this is coming from.
Yeah. That
excellent.
Is favorite. Yeah, one
Standing
of
the...
Two of he has
Go
two
ahead.
Real famous ones. One was The Vatican Rag, and another one was called Poison and Pigeons in the Park.
Okay. I'm going to have to definitely check
the guy is really severely warped.
Well, because it must be warped, because scanning them, they're, you know, they come off a little heavy. Yes, you definitely get the satirical vibe from them a bit. But, yeah, they're serious. It's serious satire.
Oh, yeah. He was part of a show called That Was the Week That Was on television in the 60s.
Yes. Right. I remember. I remember seeing that program in rerun. But yeah, I do remember the show.
Yeah, I can remember in first round, and I just adored it. And I was grief stricken when they canceled it. But he was one of the driving forces behind it, and he's still working. So you can still get his albums and still get listen to parts of them up on Amazon.
We'll be getting our hands on those tracks and adding them into the mix of what we're gonna do with this. It could be fun. My mate Scott Berry's, you know, dropped the big one from Randy Newman. I thought was pretty severe, but that's Scott for you.
I did like the World War III one. That was pretty good, because we'll end up on World War III.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah.
It's excellent. Huh?
I love the drive-by truckers, too.
Oh, yeah. That new record of theirs is just something else. First time I listened to it, it felt like a record that I had been listening to for years already. It's like it feels like an old friend, from first listen. It's a wonderful album.
Yeah, they are a group that is, I put them in the same category as, I call it musical crack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And just great lyrics, you know, following in that, you know, great kind of Neil Young and Bruce Springsteen kind of vibe of the storyteller.
Cool.
I just dig that stuff
cool.
so much.
Also falls into that category. The type of music is different, but one listen, you're hooked.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
grab you.
And I just saw another email of yours come in. But thanks for that. I will definitely check that stuff out, and we'll add it into the mix, and we'll see what makes it to the finalists for Monday.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Susan. Great to talk to you.
Okay. Bye bye.
That was our good friend Susan from up in Oregon, and. I'll definitely check that out. Tom Lehrer. It's starting to ring more of a bell in my head. But I will figure that all out as time goes by. But anyway, getting to today's track of the day. I hadn't listened to this record in quite a long while, and a couple weeks ago, Gail and I were working in the garden, and something about, I can't remember how the conversation started, but something about songs sung in French came up. So I went and showed Gail this track off of the album Ghost in the Machine called Hungry for You, which is sung in French. It's great, great, great track. And listening to the record, I kind of forgot. You know, I hadn't listened to it in so long. This is actually probably one of my favorite records of all time, Ghost in the Machine. And kind of a funny story. Many, many, many moons ago, when I still lived in New Jersey, my first flatmate was an engineer, and a good friend of his was Stuart Copeland's drum tech. And this guy, playing-wise, was a carbon copy of Stuart, and he's a really unique drummer. And the similarity ends from playing style. Visually, there's nothing similar between the two. The guy was, you know, kind of a bit of a big, round, large gentleman, as opposed to Stuart Copeland being, you know, the skinny guy that he is. And they were scheduled to play Madison Square Garden many years ago. And somewhere in between sound check and showtime, Stuart took a fall and, like, sprained his wrist or something. And suddenly was just unable to play that night. And it was only a couple of hours before doors, and there's a bit of a panic going on, you know. Do we cancel the show, all the logistics involved with all that, you know, postpone, reticket, all that kind of thing. And you can just see, you know, tour managers and promoters just pulling their hair out going, oh, my God. Well, a different decision was made. They played as though the lighting rig at the back of the stage was faulty. So the whole back of the stage drum riser was in darkness. And Stuart Copeland's drum tech played in Stuart's place, and no one in the audience had a clue. And, you know, Sting just made some sort of reference saying, sorry, we've had a major technical problem and the whole back lighting rig doesn't work. But Stuart's back there. Wave to everybody, Stuart. And this big kind of chunky hand comes up over the drums and waves. But nobody knew the guy was such a carbon copy player for Stuart, which I find really unique. And one of the things that always made The Police interesting to me is the fact that it's a pretty well-known fact that Stuart Copeland and Sting have never really gotten along. They really don't like each other much. Hence why it was such a surprise that they reformed after all these years. And, you know, huge amounts of money can make many things palatable. So in these early Police records, you listen, and the drums and bass fight each other. They're not working together. They're fighting each other. They're trying to throw each other off. And you can hear it in a lot of the tunes. And so I've got two songs from the album. The first one, I think, is a great example of that. And I'm not exactly sure who is messing with whose head, but spirits in the material world. You listen to this track, and there's this very kind of frenetic bass line. And Stewart's bass drum, you listen to it. It sounds like it's being played at this very strange interval, but it's not. It's just being played on beats 2 and 4 of the measure. It's actually very straight. But it seems as though Sting's thrown something on top of it to try and throw Stewart off. And then when the chorus kicks in, they all come in and play together. And it makes for a great little effect, because as it goes into the chorus, because of the little bit of what sounds like a beat being chopped off, it just launches. It feels like it launches. And so I just reckon that this is a great tune. And then the second one, which is Rehumanize Yourself, is much... it's a social commentary thing that I still think has meaning in this day and age, even maybe more so than at the time. So we'll start off with Spirits in the Material World, and like I said, listen to it in the verse sections how the bass and the drums fight each other. And this is exactly what Stewart and Sting did through all those years. When they started making a lot of money, they actually said, you know, we're really successful now. We should really try to get on. And the music actually suffered once they started getting along, so they decided they should better, well, start fighting again. And they did, and the music improved again. Go figure. It seems to be kind of similar to Faith No More, very internally self-destructive outfit. But without further ado, I just love this track for the rhythm, and it's just a great song. Spirits from the Material World, from the Police, from Ghost in the Machine, going, well, way back to when I was in high school. So without further ado, roll it, Bob. Great rhythm change. And I still remember I don't know, geez, the album was what, 86 or something? And taking the track, I remember taking the track into my drum teacher at the time, saying, all right, Mr. Transcriber of everything Steely Dan and everything Steve Gadd, what the hell's going on here? He sat with it for a little while, then suddenly it clicked, and he goes, I got it, and he starts writing it out. Dave Yee, you're still a genius in my mind. Now, moving on to the second track. And when we were listening to the album a couple weekends ago, this song just, you know, woke my brain up. I totally forgot about how great this lyric is. And I think that the sentiment of this song is just so spot on. With so many things, I'm not going to explain very much. Just listen to the lyric. It's just fantastic. From the same album, from Ghost in the Machine, Rehumanize Yourself. Boy, do I relate to this track. Roll it, Bob. Great track. Great track. Great little bass line. Anyway, there's my police flashback. Getting back into green stuff. We just haven't done a whole lot of it lately. Well, we haven't done a whole lot of shows lately, so I guess that there's the excuse. I get in these conversations with people sometimes, and they continue to try and say that things like solar power are not viable and no one's going for it. And I just keep looking at them going, you're insane. You're so uneducated. You so don't have a clue. You so drink the Kool-Aid from the other side of the debate that you don't even go and look and find out what's happening. Now, I've got two stories here that are kind of related. First one is, I've reported on a company called Nanosolar for months now. Led by an Australian team who's gone to the United States because that's where they can get the money. And they have now broken the big price barrier. And they said that they were going to be able to do this, and it seems that they have. Solar electricity cheaper than coal. Hello? Cheaper than coal. This is from naturalnews.com. Thanks to Gene for sending this to me. A new combination of nano and solar technology has made it possible for solar electric generation to be cheaper than burning coal. NanoSolar Incorporated has developed a way to produce a type of ink that absorbs solar radiation and converts it into electric current. Photovoltaic PV sheets are produced by a machine similar to a printing press, which rolls out the PV ink onto sheets approximately the width of aluminum foil. These PV sheets can be produced at a rate of hundreds of feet per minute. It's 100 times thinner than existing solar panels, and we can deposit the semiconductors 100 times faster, said NanoSolar's co-founder and chief executive officer, R. Martin Rocklison. It's a combination that drives down costs dramatically. Now, you add this on top of the fact that, you know, the math has already been done. 100-square-mile area of the Mojave Desert with solar geothermal plants would actually power the entire U.S. grid. So when these people turn around and tell you that it's not viable, just look at them and go, bullshit. You do not know what you're talking about. You have no idea. Get an education. Get to speed with the actual facts of what the hell's going on. Right? It's absolute insanity. All of this. Now, NanoSolar has been leading the way, and the beauty of their process of what they've done is, you know, not only have they brought the cost down, but they've been working on the fact that silicon is becoming, the supply is not keeping up with demand at the moment. And the ability to stretch out the silicon so much further is probably one of the crucial things that's going to make what these folks are doing, truly, truly viable. They say here, this is the first time that we can actually drop the cost of solar electricity down to a level that would be competitive with grid electricity in most industrialized nations, said Brian Sager, the co-founder of NanoSolar. NanoSolar is ramping up production of its power sheets at factories in San Jose, California, and Berlin, and expects to have them commercially available before the end of the year. The buzz around the power sheets is so strong that the company already has a 3 to 5 year back order, and the company has raised more than $150 million from venture capitalists, including Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin. Solar panels have not been very popular to the American people because they've been too expensive. That's what we're changing now. Well, you know, that might not necessarily exactly be the case there, mate. Because at this post over on treehugger.com, showing the U.S. shows some love for solar. They say, hey, this green thing's catching on. Not that anyone reading this is likely needing convincing that solar power is a good thing, but a new survey shows that a lot of other people now think similarly. According to the Schott Solar Barometer Report, a whopping 98% of independents, 97% of Democrats, and 91% of Republicans think that developing solar power is in the vital interests of the United States. On the flip side of this, only 3% of people surveyed thought that favoring coal was a good direction for the country to head. Additionally, a near equal amount of Democrats, 72%, Republicans, 72%, and Independents, 74%, thought that extending federal tax credits were a good way to encourage further development of solar. Granted, this is a survey conducted by two groups with an overt economic stake in the results, but the figures are certainly compelling. According to the Solar Energy Industries Association, the U.S. has potential capacity of 7,000 gigawatts in the Southwest alone. In 2007, U.S. solar installations grew at a rate of 45%, making the U.S. the fourth largest market in the world behind Germany, Japan, and Spain. So, hey, you know, when you hear these people going, no one wants solar power, again, turn to them and go, bullshit. You're full of it. You don't know what you're talking about. You can send them over to Tree Hugger so they can go and actually read up on it. Now, Ralphs mentioned this in the chat room just a little while ago. And it's kind of interesting, this announcement, it's just the timing. Because yesterday, our Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, who's been in Japan, has actually earmarked $35 million to get Toyota to start building a hybrid car, pardon me, here in Australia. I don't know if necessarily that money was necessarily needed, because it seems that Toyota was planning on doing something similar anyway, but hey, at least someone's trying to do something. Although we're looking at Priuses and whatnot, and that's kind of becoming old technology. And talking about new technology, this is pretty wild. Toyota announces new 516-mile range fuel cell electric hybrid. These boast twice the range of the previous model. There are lots of reasons. This is from gas2.org, GAS2.org. All these links are available on today's show post at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com. There are lots of reasons to want to live in Japan, but being able to lease the new Toyota fuel cell hybrid sometime this year is now high on my list. Later in 2008, Toyota released their new FCHV ADV model, which reportedly has a maximum cruising range of 516 miles compared with 205 miles for the previous fuel cell vehicle. This improved model uses both the hydrogen-powered fuel cell and an electric motor. It has improved performance and partially due to better braking efficiency. Also, Toyota claims they've managed to outsmart one of the challenges of using a fuel cell auto low temperatures. The FCHV model can start and run in temperatures as low as minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit. Toyota spokesman Keo Doi announced that pricing and other details weren't available, and overseas plans are still undecided, but the sooner these cars hit the road anywhere in the world, the better for the whole planet. And I agree wholeheartedly. So, you know, it's just proving, you know, where the investment takes place, we have success. You know, only 10 years ago, here in Australia, just as an example, the two domestic automakers, one being Holden, which is actually General Motors. General Motors just likes to let the Australians believe it's an Australian car maker. And the Australian version of Ford pretty much ran 40 to 50% of the market in this country. Well, over 10 years, because Ford continues to build, you know, stupid, really big cars that nobody wants, and Holden kept building nothing but V8 sports, you know, coupes that no one really wanted except for gearhead knob ends. Now, Toyota, who only had maybe 20% of the market, is now the single market leader in Australia. And why is that? They've been building the kind of cars that people need. They've been building smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. They've been moving into, you know, the hybrid, now the plug-in hybrid, and now this fuel cell, you know, electric hybrid vehicle. And they've gone from being one of the small manufacturers to actually being the world's largest automaker. So it seems trying to do the right thing, whether the technology is perfect or not, does seem to be a financial winner. I've been reading stuff like this for, you know, years now, that where you get proper investment in the research and development, and as products come to market, the R&D continues to build speed. You know, it's like computers. And we, you know, it's just proven the point. You know, I don't, I kind of can't reiterate it any other way. It just makes sense. So hopefully with this thing that where Toyota is going to start building hybrids here, maybe they'll readjust and be building these newer models here. I think it would be a smarter thing to do, especially considering the fact that, you know, this is a country that has, you know, fairly great distances between capital cities, and something with 500 miles range would be, you know, a whole lot more viable in the larger picture in a country like Australia. I mean, you know, you got to remember this place here is, you know, almost the land, the same as the landmass of the United States, but we only have 20-some million people. Unlike, you know, the 200-some million in the United States. Sometimes really freaks me out, you know, when I think about it, how much open, empty space there is. Now, a lot of that space is, you know, virtually, you know, no one could live there because there's no water and it's scorching heat 12 months of the year. but, all the more reason, if any country in the world should be, you know, just jumping into bed completely naked with solar power, it's Australia. You know, I mean, you know, it should just be like, you know, no protection, nothing, just dive in and do the do. There is more sunshine here all throughout the year than any other place in the world. You know, it, like I said, if 100 square miles of the California desert can, it has the mathematical capability of supplying the entire U.S. grid, then Australia would be able to do it with, you know, a much smaller, you know, a much smaller, you know, bit of space. And we've got tons of space. I mean, we've got tons. And some of the geology in Australia, especially in the heart of Australia, is almost custom built for just straight geothermal power. So, as Bob says, you know, solar power should be a no-brainer for the Saudis, too. Yeah. You know, if they actually were being really smart, they'd be, you know, taking some of those riches and making themselves independent from their own oil. And then, boy, would they be sitting pretty. Because they can afford it. You know, this is the problem with, you know, a lot of this world is that we're so short-sighted that, you know, you just don't think that far out. And it's probably the thing that frustrates me more than anything is this constant short-sighted. It's amazing. Bob says here, you know, the Saudis have enough space to solarize and send electricity to the whole region. And that is actually true. You know, I've been pumping up the solar geothermal generation system, the SHVEG system, for, you know, over a year now at least. And, you know, there are a couple of, you know, small systems like this in the States. There's a massive one in Spain. And it's been so successful. It's been so unbelievably successful that the Spanish are considering building more and then actually pumping the electricity to the UK. The UK. I mean, you know, you think about that. Spain would be able to export power to the UK. So the UK might not have the sunshine, they might not have the space left. But it's actually looking at being financially viable. You know, and the SHVEG system works on, for those that aren't familiar, is a system that uses already known technology. Steam-driven turbines, right? This is what coal generation plants drive is steam turbines. So this, you know, the SHVEG system is just an array of mirrors that all focus up on a huge concrete tower full of amorphous ammonia, and that ammonia is heated to spin the turbines. The excess power is then stored in tanks or underground. The excess steam. And when the sun goes down, the system reverses, and the excess power goes and spins in the other direction to continue to generate power in the night. And this thing can be scaled not just to day-night cycles, it can be scaled to seasonal cycles. So you'd be able to use the same exact system at the North and South Pole and actually have it be able to run kind of 6 months on one direction, 6 months off the other direction. And the beauty of one of the main systems that's out there is actually being developed as an open source project. In other words, this is so important that no one needs to profit off of the technology. The technology is being open sourced so that anyone who has the ability to build it can take that technology and use it. And if they advance the technology or modify the technology, just like open source software, they add it to the project and it continues to build. And I actually think, because I work in the, I work building websites all the time, and I virtually never buy software. I always use open source stuff. Why? It's not just because it's free. It's because it usually works better than the bought stuff. And there's an entire community out there who works to support it, to make it work, not to make it profitable. In other words, the software is not a commercial endeavor. But if you use the software and you like it and you can afford to, you make a donation to the folks that are doing the coding. And I do plenty of that. And I've watched, you know, simple little web programs over a couple of years turn into unbelievably full-blown content management systems. And it's all been by open source community. And most of the softwares that run the biggest websites on the web are being run on open source applications because they work. And people come up with a new feature, a new function, they write it, they add it. And it's the same approach that's being used with some of these solar geothermal projects. You can just Google SHPEGS, S-H-P-E-G-S, and there's a great website you'll find that explains how the whole system works. And it's so genius and so based on technology that we already understand and we already use that most lay people can read the technical data and understand how this works, how it can work, how it will work. So I'm really happy to see that, you know, this survey has come down showing that, you know, pretty well across political lines, folks in the United States, whether their representatives actually say it or not, believe that solar is the way to go. It is the only way to go. Well, not the only way, but it's a really crucial way to get us out of the problem that we're in. Because the problem that we're in is that the oil is running out. The continued burning of coal is poisoning our land, our water, our air, our people. And we can't continue doing what we're doing. And I know most of you listening to this program know all this. So, you know, sometimes I sit here and I go through this over and over again, and I'm like, I feel like I'm beating at the wrong people, you know? And I just, every time I do this, I kind of hope that there's someone new out there listening that's hearing this for the first time saying, really? Wow, I didn't know they were doing that. Because they've started construction on a beautiful SHPEGS plant in northern Victoria that will supply a serious amount of power. It's the first one, you know. Actually, John Howard's government actually approved that, or actually threw money into it. I think it might be a state government thing. But, you know, they get this one done. They're going to see how viable and effective and usable and reliable and base load power generation for almost nothing after the construction. I mean, we're talking about, you know, no carbon emissions after construction is complete. I mean, really, how can you argue with that? We're going to go to the phones. Our chief news ninja, Gene, is on the line. How you going, my friend? Welcome to the program.
Well, hello, John. I envy you. You have a government thinks ahead and is into the green power thing, and it's so great. Because you probably saw the little letter I sent you, I think earlier, about our lovely Senate, who said, oh, no, we don't want to give a solar energy tax credit. Oh God!
It's madness. We had a similar thing. I don't know. It might be almost 2 years ago now, where the federal government, you know, decided they were going to wrap up the solar panel rebate scheme. But it had only been running for a couple of years, and they said people weren't picking it up fast enough, so they were going to kill it. And you know, the public kind of went, "Wait a minute." You've only had the thing going for 2 years.
Well,
you know, you got to give people a chance.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I'll admit it. Australians appear to be more aware, let me put it that way, than my own countrymen seem to be. I mean, not only do we lose the tax credit, but one of the American solar companies, Suntar, said that they mixed. They're just going to pull up stakes and move where there's a real market. So, you know, not only do we lose a tax rate, we lose a solar business. And I just...
Well, that's what happened here, man. For so long, they weren't getting supported here, where some of the best solar development was happening was in Australia. And so that the nanosolar outfit, who you sent me the article about, those are Australians that went to the United States because that's where they could get the investment money.
Well, if some fellow shows up at your door, go ahead and take them. But meanwhile, while we're nixing the solar project, what do you see over at Rocksteady with the oil companies saying, don't regulate the oil companies. We'll retaliate if you do that.
It's just sickening, Gene, you know. As everyone's, you know, just absolutely being killed by fuel prices at the moment, and the fact that it's obvious that, yes, we have a serious problem with the oil supply running out, but the market is manipulated by the cartel.
Of course.
And so, you know, obviously the American people would like to see that windfall tax on the oil companies, to get some of that ridiculous profit back into the system to help people. But this, again, is our lobbyist problem that we have in the United States. It's just huge. I mean, ever since Rudd got into government here, you know, going on the green message, from all reports, Canberra, our capital, has just been teeming with fossil fuel lobbyists.
Oh, man. There's got to be something. Heck,
it's gonna be forced on us one day, Gene.
For a minute, I don't know.
It's gonna be forced on us if they don't actually wake up in, you know, 10 or 20 years. It's all gonna fall apart.
Frankly, you know what? I think I'd amend that. I'd say within 4 years. I'll give it a presidential cycle. In 4 years, for the majority of the United States, it will have already fallen apart. It's only going to be the upper classes that it still works for.
Yeah, I won't argue with you there. You know, I guess I'm being a bit nice when saying, you know, 10 or 20 years, kind of going on the outside estimates.
Yeah.
I actually already think that the effects of peak oil were always going to be seen before we actually fully hit peak oil. Because the signs would be there. And I think that that's what we're in now. I mean, someone outside of the United States actually upped the estimate that we'll be at $250 a barrel by the end of the year.
Oh,
and now the Energy Department has come out and said, look, folks, just get used to it. It ain't going to get any better.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. And I think I sent you that letter because yesterday was I have an occasional lunch date with a friend who's a conservative, and the first things out of his mouth were, "Oh, did you hear about the petition that 3,200 scientists delivered to the White House saying that there is no such thing as human beings aren't the cause of global warming. And I realize that's sort of a little bit off the peak oil subject, but man, it's like, will you please get a clue? Wake up and look around. You have to be sitting to the middle of Arizona and just let there be no water?
Yeah, when you compare, 3,200 scientists said it's not happening, but if you do the comparison, they'd be 1% of all the scientists out there, and the other 99% say that it's happening and man is doing it, or man is exacerbating it. So, the retort to that is say, yeah, but they're only 1% of the community, and they're probably being paid the same way that they're probably the same scientists that were being paid by the tobacco companies to say that smoking was not addictive and didn't harm health in front of Congress a couple of decades ago, because that's actually what's being seen. It's the same exact scientists being paid by the same people to try and debunk the real science.
I agree with you. It's just hard to sit down and talk calmly and rationally with these folks. It's like, oh, it's science. Like, I swear, I mean, it's like, okay, you don't believe in global warming, or you don't believe in birth control. Well, then you can't buy. Allowed to buy these honking gas guzzlers that get like 4 miles per gallon and all this stuff. And I'm getting tired of supporting stupidity. I know. I mean, financially, it's like, I feel like I'm paying for the idiots, and it's driving me nuts. Anyway, I'll get off the line, but I'm in a rant mode tonight, and I just want to
That's all right, man. That's what it's for. And I always love hearing from you. And as usual, thanks for all the stuff you send me all the time. You know, I really couldn't do this show without what you send me, man. You just you keep me up to date with things. Thanks so much for everything. All right, man. Take care of yourself. Our good friend Gene, the News Ninja. Hi! As Bruce used to do. And Gene's really up on the whole peak oil thing. I'm not sure if he's still involved or if it's still going on, but he was involved in some sort of discussion group on peak oil and used to send me stuff on the discussions that they had. And it's a serious subject, you know, and the fact that it isn't kind of right up front, you know, as an issue. And, you know, saying, regardless of global warming, all of that, the oil is disappearing. This finite resource that we have based our societies on is running out. And I've said this before. No planet, no business, right? No planet, no business, no life, no consumers. So unless business wants to stay in business, they have to wake up to the reality. And many are, and are upset that governments are not taking the steps that are necessary, are not setting out a timetable and a roadmap for actually getting off of the oil teat, where business can make their own plans on investment, on actually making it work. Government actually has to lead the way. And I know that this completely freaks out those that, that, it just frustrates me so. It's got to be cheap. It's got to be cheap. It's got to be cheap. What about when it's gone? What happens when it's all gone and you've made no attempt, no real attempt to come up with an alternative? You know, and there's more reports, like every other day about, the disappearance of species is accelerating. The the rising of the oceans is accelerating. The rise in ocean temperatures is accelerating. And I've gone on about this, that the environment is a feedback loop system. And as you continue to feed it in a direction, it's just going to continue to accelerate in that direction. And this is what we've seen, you know, over the past, 8 years. In the past 8 years, the science has been coming out thick and fast. And every time a new model comes out, it has outpaced the previous model. And if that doesn't start to set up a reasonable expectation that we are in a feedback loop, and until we actually change what the hell we're doing, nothing's going to change. We're not going to help the situation. We're just going to continue feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. It's going to get faster and it's going to get stronger. Until it gets to the point that, I mean, I already believe that we've gone past the point of being able to stop all the damage. We're now at the point of trying to actually just pull it back to try and limit the damage. And you got to remind people that don't want to accept the reality that it's not so much about saving the planet. It's about saving humankind. Now, I never got to my Haagen-Dazs story, which I will get to tomorrow. But check out today's show post. Haagen-Dazs has this great little website, and I'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow, about saving the bees. Now, we've covered on this program, Bob's covered it, I think, as well, about honeybee colony collapse syndrome. You know, we're just, like, losing the honeybees. And without bees, you know, like, 75% to 90% of the pollination for food is done by bees. And Haagen-Dazs has actually created this beautiful website. I think it's just SaveTheBees.com. And it's this, they're saying their whole thing is the bees help us make the best ice cream in the world, and the bees are in trouble. We need to help the bees. We need to find out what's happening, because if there's no bees, there's no really good ice cream. The bees are responsible for like 70% of their flavors. And so this is a sign of business looking at what's going on and realizing that it's actually a threat to their very existence. So check out the show post. You see a little picture of a bee that I made at the site. And it's a great little website. Whoever did the flash programming on it, kudos. Beautiful work. It's one of the most beautiful websites I've seen in a long time. It's definitely worth checking out. And there's some really great information. And it's beginning to be thought, I'm not sure if this site says this, but it's beginning to be thought that pesticides and very possibly GM crops are responsible for the colony collapse syndrome. Getting right back to those Monsanto bastards again. So with that, we're going to wrap it up. Don't forget to email me your suggestions for a campaign song for John McCain. Email them to me at johnjon@headonradionetwork.com, and we'll get all that together and open up the poll next week. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing tonight. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archive. He's running a fundraiser at the moment, as far as I understand. And thanks to Coal River Mountain Walk, CRMW.net. You too can be part of the fight against mountaintop removal. So as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green.
We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people, we ought to fly.